Welcome to 21. I'm Drew Lasker. I'm a family man, professional athlete, and business owner of Train Harder 21 and 21 Media. Yvonne Harris and I have teamed up and created this podcast to explore the life lessons that come along with being an athlete. Why 21? It's my jersey number and a key part to my great fortune and career. So it seems fitting for this podcast.
Hi, I'm Yvonne Harris. I'm a proud boy mom and an advocate for efforts that improve the lives of women and children. Experiencing success as an athlete or in any facet of life does not happen by accident. There must be clarity, intention, and the willingness to pivot. Our guests on 21 share their journeys in ways that cause you to reflect, assess, and then take action. We are so thankful for the stories shared on this podcast because Drew and I know their wisdom shortens someone else's path to success. Enjoy this episode of 21.
Welcome back to 21, and today's guest is a great friend of mine who just happens to be a former teammate. He's a high school state champion, an all-time blocks leader at Point Loma Nazarene University, and he's the head coach of Scottsdale Christian Academy High School in Scottsdale, Arizona. And more importantly, he's just a great dude. So we welcome on the show today, Coach John Anderson. John, welcome to 21, my man.
Thank you. Thank you, Drew, for having me. It's a privilege to be here and see your beautiful face. I miss it often.
All right. Well, to kick off the show, we're going to throw you right in the hot seat. We know you deal with pressure really well. So why wait? So we call this game 21 questions with 21. So basically, we're just rapid fire questions at you and you just answer to the best of your ability.
All right. Shoot.
All right. First question, Whataburger or In-N-Out?
Whataburger, hometown Whataburger.
Nike or Adidas?
100% Nike. Even though I have an Under Armour jacket on right now, that's our school sponsored by Under Armour, which I'm not super happy about. It's got to be Nike all day.
All day, baby. Beer or tequila?
Oh, beer for sure. Cold beer.
Beach or mountains?
Ooh, man. My wife would say beach, but I'm going to say mountains. I love the cool air, love the nature.
Tupac or Biggie?
Oh, Tupac, West Coast.
Jordan or LeBron?
Jordan, no doubt.
Texans or Cowboys?
Got to go Texans. I'm a David Johnson. I gotta follow where he goes. So I really enjoyed David Johnson when he was here. So gotta stick with the Texans.
Popeyes or Chick-fil-A?
Chick-fil-A.
Vegas or Miami?
Oh, Vegas, all day.
IHOP or Waffle House?
IHOP. I can't even think of a Waffle House around me. So.
East Coast or West Coast?
West Coast. Gotta have the weather, the sunshine.
Early bird or night owl?
I would say early bird.
Grilled or fried?
Oh, fried.
Car or truck?
Oh, truck.
Bluebell or Häagen-Dazs?
Bluebell.
Coke or Pepsi?
Coke out of the fountain, Pepsi out of a bottle.
Summer or winter?
Summer, and that's coming from somebody in Arizona when it's 115 here. Man, I love the summer.
Xbox or PlayStation?
Xbox.
Dishes or laundry?
Oh, dishes for sure.
City or country?
Oh, I mean, it's got to be city for life, but.
And finally, club or house party?
Oh, house party for sure. House party, the music is a little more chill. Float in the pool, just sit back and chill, man. House party.
And now you're off the hot seat, my guy. Thanks for playing with us.
Yeah, it wasn't too bad. Wasn't too bad.
Let's get a little bit deeper. But before we do, just share to our listeners a little bit of background about John Anderson.
Oh, man, there's not that much that's exciting to talk about. I am the youngest of a total of four siblings. somehow I got the height that none of my parents or siblings have. My dad was 5'10". My mom's about 5'7". I guess you could say I had taller brothers. My oldest brother was 6'3", then my next brother was 6'2". Then my sister was 5'3", 5'4", so she kind of missed that. And then all of a sudden I shoot up to 6'7". So naturally, kind of just grew up playing basketball. I was always on the taller side. Played all sports. That's what we did back in the day, unlike today and today's kids. But yeah, just kind of naturally developed into a basketball player, a sport that I loved. You know, played high school basketball, was successful there, was lucky enough to have an opportunity to play in college and have school paid for. And that was just a huge blessing to have, and you know, really pushed me and challenged me. And it's where I met my wife at Point Loma, and it's really shaped my whole life. The game of basketball in one way or another has influenced it. But yeah, I've got married to my beautiful wife Bree of 17 years now. We got married in 2003. We have two beautiful children. Isabella is 15 years old, almost turning 16, almost a driver, which is absolutely insane. She's a sophomore. And then my son Tyler is 13, just turned 13 last month. He's in seventh grade. So it was great. We always talked about wanting to have one of each. You know, we got our boy and our girl, and it was an easy decision as parents, like, perfect, we're done. You know, I was afraid of the girl, you know, we got to try for a boy, that situation, or vice versa. My wife always wanted a girl. I was afraid, man, if you start busting out boys, like, how many is it going to take before we, you know, stop having kids? But we were blessed. We always wanted two, and we had one of each, and it's been great ever since. So they're both active. They're both active kids. They both play sports, and they're blessings to us in our lives. So that's me in a nutshell, man.
And it's great to see that picture of your beautiful family right behind your left shoulder.
Oh, so. Yeah, that's, that's maybe 5 years old. And my wife is a photographer, an amazing photographer, that she primarily does maternity photo shoots. She's did a photo shoot for Drew back in the day.
A great
and, so she's very picky with her photos that we have hanging in our house. So if you were to walk through our house, it is literally, it's like an art museum with all the different beautiful pictures that she has of our family, which is great. And that's something everybody comments in when they walk through our house. Wow, these are beautiful pictures. And it's nice to have a wife who's got an eye for that kind of thing.
Absolutely. Well, John, you mentioned basketball, and it sounds like you found your niche in basketball really early. But what was your second love, like your second favorite sport?
I would say it kind of bounced around. Basketball was the game that I always played. And, you know, every recess at school, you go and you play basketball. You know, every summer, you're doing stuff with basketball. And so the other sports I would hit was always whatever season it was, right? So we're in the fall, we play football. We're in the, you know, winter, we play soccer. It's just, you kind of just went sport to sport. And basketball was the one kind of constant through all of that. And that's how my siblings were as well. It's just, that's the way we were raised. What sport are you in? You play that. You play that for your school, or you play in your youth league, just stay active. So I, you know, and I think that I kind of went from one sport to another throughout like high school. For instance, I decided to finally play football my senior year because, frankly, I was a tall, skinny kid that I would have got crushed as a freshman or a sophomore. And it wasn't until I kind of grew and got a little bit stronger, and I'm like, all right, let's give football a shot. And I had a blast playing football my senior year. And, you know, my coaches were like, man, John, you should think about going playing football in college instead of basketball. And I just don't think I had the mentality to go either get hit all the time or go hit people. I just, you know, didn't ever have that bug that some people get. But yeah, I would say I was a well-rounded athlete, and that was something I'm glad my parents did. I think that it's not seen in today's world, which is, I think, there's pros and cons to it, but I think there's definitely a lot of cons to that, you know, the idea of a one sport athlete and what it can do to them and their body and their mental side of things. And so we try to encourage our kids to do the same, you know, get out there and just be an athlete.
And what life skills did basketball teach you?
Oh man, what life skills did basketball not teach me? Yeah, I mean, first and foremost, being a teammate, right? How working well with others. You're not always going to have the best teammate. You don't know, whatever team you get put on. They might be an awesome person. They might be a person that needs help. They might be a person that has conflict with you. And you've got to be able to work through that for the greater good of whatever you're doing. You know, in that sport, it's to be a better team, right? So in terms of a life skill, as you're walking into whatever job you have in the future, you don't know who your the employees that you're working with are going to be, your peers. You don't know who your boss is going to be, what they're going to be like. So being able to adapt and play for a team, essentially, you know, in life is huge. I think along with that is learning to be, you know, selfless and knowing that whatever you're doing in life, there's usually it's for a greater good. You know, when you call it for work, it's whatever your work's mission statement is, or if you're a coach, it's your goal for that, for being a coach. So it's a matter of kind of putting others before you, you know, being unselfish. And then also learning to work hard. You set goals for yourself. You set goals on a team. Apply yourself and get after it. So yeah, I mean, those are kind of just main ideas that I've taken from basketball, from any sport that I played, that you just can immediately take into life. And you are so far ahead of people that didn't play a team sport. You know, I truly do think, and not taking anything away from, let's say, like a tennis player or somebody who golfs, that's a little bit more of an individual sport. I do think you come into a situation in life where playing a team sport is so beneficial, the relationships that you form. And yeah, it really shows your true colors and your character when you're put in sports situations, pressure, and how you perform. And it relates so well to life. So yeah, that was a very long answer for, you know, what can be a simple question, but it really is a deep question.
Yeah. And all those attributes that you mentioned are attributes that are important for a winning environment within a team concept. And I kind of mentioned it in your intro that you were a state champion, but you're actually a two-time state champion over at Scottsdale Christian Academy. And what describe that feeling of what it's like to win a championship.
Yeah, it's, and the unique and great thing for me is that both championships were so different. So, I mean, I was a kid, you think, oh, he played college basketball. He must've been awesome in high school, right? That's kind of like, you assume that because, hey, you had talent to play there. So it translated to high school. Well, that wasn't the case. I mean, when I was a freshman, I didn't make the JV team or the varsity team. I was on the freshman team. When I was a sophomore, I made the JV team. Still didn't make the varsity team. You know, this is, and I was fine with that because that was the progression of what you did. Some kids made it, some kids didn't. You know, I used what I was given and learned to get better. And through those two roles of being on those teams, I learned how to lead a team, right? You know, it's like, hey, I didn't make that team, but here I am as a floor leader, learning to guide a team. So come my junior year, the class above me was phenomenal. They were just stacked, man. So when I became a junior, it literally was a team full of seniors. There was like, it was like 11 seniors and me as the lone junior. And that was the year I kind of shot up a little bit in height. I finally got up to about 6'5", you know, and I think that I came into a position on the team where we had shooters. We had a ridiculous point guard. We had a big, you know, 6'7" big who could shoot. You know, we had just a nasty defender, just a guy, like a lockdown guy. So it's like, okay, well, who am I on this team? You know, what am I? I don't need to be the scorer. I don't need it. So you kind of learn real quick. My junior year, was lucky enough to earn a starting position. And I kind of learned to be like the jack of all trades, just be a great defender, be a great teammate, be a great passer, help facilitate the offense. But I don't need to score points. I think I averaged like 5 points a game. You know, I was very just like 5 points a game, 8 rebounds a game, 4 block shots a game, you know, just whatever it was I had to do, that's what I did. But that team, we were expected to win. Like this was like the greatest team ever formed at Scottsdale Christian, and expectations were very high, which actually put a lot of pressure on us. Luckily, we had a great year. We ended up going 30-3 and won the state championship, but the team that we played in state championship was the reservation team. And I know not many states have, you know, Indian reservations, but the basketball they play is phenomenal. There's actually a Netflix documentary. If you ever get the chance to watch it, it came out, I think, over the summer. It's about a Chinle basketball team up in the reservation. I forget what it's called. It's on Netflix. It's called like Res Ball or something like that. But it really gives you a great glimpse of the type of basketball they play. Well, they came in, I mean, their tallest kid was 6 feet tall, you know, and they just ran. It was just like, you know, line change, run up and down, no structure. And here we are, like this like dream team of a high school basketball team. And they just, I mean, they come out and they just take over the game. They had us from the get-go. We ended up somehow luckily banking in a three at the end of regulation to send it to overtime. Overtime, we finally started playing our basketball, pulled away, you know, got up by 4 points with, you know, 20 seconds left, ended up winning it. But it was one of those like, whew, you know, we almost let this slip away, something that we've, you know, these kids, obviously all the senior class have been working for. There's a lot of hard work put into that season, but expectations were so high that it was like, man, this is, we should win. And we did, but it was like, man, whew, we almost let that slip. So it was a great feeling being a state championship. Well, then come my senior year, it's me, the lone senior now. We ended up having a couple of my classmates join the varsity team, and they were okay, but you know, they didn't start, and really there weren't any other seniors that played, but I had this class below me, the junior class, that had been playing JV ball, and they were pretty solid, but none of them played varsity ball. So, I mean, we were picked to come in like last in our region, you know, me, the only returning starter, averaging 5 points a game. It's like, what, you know, let's just go out and have fun. And all of a sudden we just start clicking, man. And I bonded so well. And those like, you know, six, seven in our rotation ended up becoming like my best friends. You know, we had really good success, and we just started peaking at the perfect time come playoffs, and, you know, really bought into our defense, and kind of, we knew that if, hey, we're going to win, it's gotta be as a team and playing solid defense. We ended up going all the way. We finished 27-7 that year, but we were 20-7 going into the tournament. We actually had to play a play-in game to qualify to make the state championship. And I want to say we were the 22 seed going in, and we ended up just navigating our way through, knocked off the one seed along the way, and ended up winning state. And so that was like, you compare the two experiences from like, you have no chance, you're picked last in your region, to actually accomplishing a goal. Yeah. When you work together was so rewarding. It was so amazing. I actually remember my dad, it was getting close to my, to the state tournament run. And, you know, we're playing in the winter, and the spring is baseball. That's the next sport. My dad wanted me to play baseball. I had played baseball growing up, and I ended up giving it up because I was like, this game isn't for me. My dad wanted me to play baseball so bad my senior year. He's like, you should play baseball. If you play baseball, and this goes back to the truck that you were talking about, because I wanted to get lifted so bad. And he goes, if you play baseball, I'll lift your truck for you. And I'm like, holy cow, man, like that's, this would be awesome. And, you know, I said, well, okay, how about this? Would you rather see me play baseball? Would you rather see me win state? You know, this was before we even really thought we had a chance. He said, of course, if you win state. So like in the back of my mind, I'm like, I'm winning state at all costs. Like this is going to happen. So it was just a funny, but yeah, two state championships. Was really blessed to have awesome teammates, a great coach. And I mean, not many kids can say they walked off their high school basketball career, you know, as a state championship. So it sounds corny to be like, to hold on to that memory and still talk about it, but it really was, it's just amazing memories with friends. And yeah, you look back and you say, yeah, I got to win a championship, and that's really cool. And, you know, it's not something that I take lightly, because I know there's a lot of hard work that goes into that kind of, you know, an accomplishment. And, yeah. So, and, you know, it's something that's awesome.
And winning is winning no matter what level it's at. So, yeah. And you know, there's character being built. There's lessons learned that you can, you know, take with you later on in your life. And for you, obviously you parlayed those two championships into a scholarship at Point Loma Nazarene University. So how did you end up in San Diego, California?
Well, San Diego, like most people who live in Arizona, that's your like second home. That's where you go to escape the heat when you're able to. So that was like where we vacationed all the time as a family. Christmas, we always went to San Diego. Summer, we would go to San Diego. So to me, it really was like a second home. And I knew the Point Loma girls basketball coach at the time was Bill Westfall. And going back to, I touched on it earlier with you, Drew, that the camp that our family ran up in Prescott, Arizona, was a huge facility. You've been there. I don't know if you remember, we got a gym, indoor gym, we got outdoor courts. Well, during the summer, it was utilized as a basketball camp. So back in the day, Paul Westfall, who at the time was the Suns head coach, and then Bill Westfall, who was the girls coach at Point Loma, they would throw a summer long camps up there where they were weekly camps. And so I as a kid growing up, that's what I did every summer. It was, I'd play in these weekly camps, just nonstop all summer long. I mean, it was like a basketball player's dream to play in this. So anyways, we got to knowing Bill Westfall really well, and getting close to my senior year, we just kind of reached out and we're like, hey, obviously we know you're the girls coach, but you know, we're going to send you some videotape. Maybe you can, you know, pass it across your office to the boys coach. And we kind of just started that conversation. You know, back in the day, there was no Twitter and, you know, every highlight film you can imagine, it was VHS tapes. And so, you know, we'd complete a game and I had a good game and we'd stick the VHS tape in the mail and send it away. And you just kind of cross your fingers and hope that they're going to sit there and watch it and press play and fast forward through the game and watch it. And, you know, just lucky enough that they kind of caught my attention, that, you know, they liked what they saw. We started communication and ended up just being a great fit, getting out there and getting to play on scholarship. And for me, it was awesome because it was close to home and my parents could, you know, still come out and watch me play. And yeah, that's how I ended up out there.
But how did you balance it all, John? Because, you know, what Drew and I really like to emphasize is that in the term student athlete, there's the word student mm-hmm. and there's the word athlete. Mm-hmm. So you've got to be great at both things. And yep. What was your daily schedule like, maybe during season and in the off season?
Yeah, I mean, during season specifically, you quickly realize what your priorities are. And we had a pretty set schedule at Point Loma. You know, it was, you know, practice Tuesday, Thursday was, you know, 1:30 to 3:30. And then Monday, Wednesday, Friday was 3:30 to 5:30. And you kind of rotated with the girls team, for those times. But as we all know, that's the time that you're on the court. There's a whole other time spent in the quote unquote locker room, the classroom for basketball, watching video. And then you got to schedule this, you know, full class schedule around these times that you know you're going to be taken up. And yeah, all of a sudden you're like, wow, I can eat here and I can eat here. And then I get to have dinner at this point and I got to focus and get my homework done because we're starting it all the next day, you know, and it really puts an emphasis on, and, you know, like I always tell my kids and anybody who has kids in sports, it's a blessing to have your kids in sports, because if you weren't playing a sport, you have a whole lot of free time on your hands and that's where kids get in trouble. You know, that's where decisions are made that you maybe regret in life when you've got free time. And especially as a college student, you're focused, you're trying to keep your mind and your body right. And, you know, there's not a whole lot of time for normal, you know, college life. And, so it really gets your priorities in order. And, you know, even then when, you know, I actually met my wife in college and we were engaged, my junior year, we were engaged for a full year, and then we were married my senior year. So my whole senior year, I was a you know, newlywed, and people are like, man, that's crazy. First of all, we knew what we wanted. We were both on the same path. We had our goals set out in front of us and we're going, well, why don't we just do this together? It's a whole lot easier to do it together than to just be together, you know, living two separate lives and still navigating this process. And so, especially when I was dating her, when we got engaged and we got married, it really starts to put your priorities in order. Like, man, you know, this is what we want to do. We love it. And, you know, school came first. I ended up, you know, taking summer school because I think I had my second semester of freshman year, and you're like, oh man, this is nice. The weather's warm in San Diego. Wait, I get to schedule my own schedule. You know, all of a sudden I should be scheduling 16 hours of classes. And I find myself, I'm like, oh, you know, I think 12 is probably good. That gives me, you know, especially after the season was over, I'm like, man, I'm off at like 11 a.m. on Tuesdays and Thursdays. I'm going to the beach every day. You know, that was my second semester freshman lifestyle. And then all of a sudden, you know, you come back sophomore year and you're like, well, shoot, I don't want to be around here for my fifth year, you know? And then you meet the girl of your dreams. And all of a sudden I'm like, well, crap, now I got to play catch up. So, you know, I ended up doing summer school, you know, doing stuff to stay on top of that, because you're right. The basketball only lasts for so long. Well, for most of us, I know Drew's still a, you know, ridiculous athlete, but at some point, our education has to take over. And so it was difficult, but it wasn't something I was afraid of or didn't think I could do. It just, you know, it takes that extra dedication, put your priorities in order. And yeah, it was a great experience.
Well, John, I think this is the first time we've taken a deep dive into the relationship part of it. It's reminding me of the movie Love and Basketball and just listening to you. So I appreciate you sharing all of that.
Yeah.
And I think everyone just has a different path, but you know, just your transparency on that, I'm sure, is helping someone. So take all of your experience and try to dial it down into, you know, what's the recipe? What would you share to a student athlete right now who's about to go to college? How would you advise them in a way that they can be successful and balance it all?
Well, what I tell my teammate, my team right now, my students, the athletes on the basketball team is focus on the details. You know, the details matter in life. So, you know, in the game of basketball, details matter. Your ability to focus on those small things is huge. But most importantly, learn to apply yourself. And I know that sounds like so corny, but everybody's given, they're given God-given talents. And that might be basketball. It might be whatever sport it is. But apply the gifts that have been given to you. And they're going to be different for everybody. So embrace what you're good at, become great at them. And, you know, that's for a basketball player, we've kind of talked about the things that you can learn in life from, you know, basketball. And if you apply yourself in the game of basketball, man, you can leave college with a degree better than any degree that you may have gotten there, if that makes sense, because you've learned to win at life when you learn to apply yourself and you put others before yourself, you put your team before you, and you kind of live a servanthood lifestyle, you know, a lifestyle where you're thankful for the things that you've been given and been blessed with. So yeah, that's what I would say. I'd say, you know, apply yourself.
Well, getting back to you and bragging on you a little bit. So you get to Point Loma your first year. You guys are a solid team, 15-14 with Willie Briscoe and that crew. And then your second year, you guys fall to 5-27. And then there's a coaching change. And then your junior year, obviously, I join you there. But on a positive note for that sophomore year, you just went crazy, man. So you have the all-time top six game blocks in Point Loma Nazarene's history with 11, 10, 9, 8, 7, and 7. Like, what happened?
I'm going to back it up here, Drew, because I think you're jumping over this fact that, yeah, we were my freshman year. We were a very heavy, here it is again, another heavy senior team that they came off a great national tournament run the previous year. So there was a lot of hope for the team. I came in as a freshman. There was five other freshmen with me. So we had like 15 on our team. And I was just like, oh man, I just hope I can make this travel team. Like that's like, they travel with 12. I just want to be able to travel on the bus. Gosh, that would be so embarrassing if I couldn't travel. So that was kind of my expectations going into the season. Well, pretty quickly I learned that, like, hey, I'm going to apply myself here. And I worked my tail off, and all of a sudden 3 games into the season, I'm starting as a freshman. And I'm just like, you know, ended up having a really fun year, a year that I wasn't expecting. My expectations weren't that high. But my point is that that was the year that you guys went and lost in the Final Four, right?
That's correct.
CHC. Yeah. And I mean, of our, I think 15 wins that we have, we were 2-0 against Christian Heritage that year. So I don't know. I don't think you put it in your notes to talk about if it's like embarrassing, but the 2 times that we played you, we beat you pretty good. So, you know, I know Brad was on here, you know, a couple weeks ago, Nicholson, he was on that team with Drew and these guys, these CHC guys, they seem to forget this, that like all they talk about is the season when they went to the Final Four, but man, the little crosstown rival just owned you guys during the year.
Yeah. And on top of that, if you want to dive into it, that was the first time I remember playing you guys. I think it might have been your homecoming. I shot an air ball at the free throw line that literally stuck with me for years mentally. So, but anyways, moving on.
Yeah. So then, you know, getting to my sophomore year, all those seniors graduated. Our best player, who was a returner, actually left, and he went to Biola. BJ Foster, who's currently a coach at Cal State San Marcos. So that's another former player who went on to play and coach at a high level. But yeah, we really struggled that year. It basically became a freshman and sophomore led team, me being a sophomore on that team. And obviously, as you know, in the game of, you know, in the college basketball world, there's not a whole lot of teams out there that can survive that don't have, you know, really, you know, great veterans and leadership. So kind of quickly I was thrown into that role of being a captain as a sophomore, and it was a great learning experience for me. But kind of onto the shot blocking side, our coach John Block at the time was, you know, his philosophy was, hey, you know, we play help defense and we funnel stuff to John. I think he kind of realized that I had a, you know, some ability to get up, you know, get off the floor and had good timing with blocking shots. So it kind of just, like, I don't know what it was. It was a confidence thing. It was a game planning, game scheming thing where I built trust with my teammates. They knew that I was going to be there, you know, if they got beat or they funneled players to me, you know. And from a shot blocking side, it's all about position. It's about being where you need to be at the right time and, you know, kind of influencing the shooter into shooting a specific shot that I know I can get, you know. So, yeah, I got kind of on a nice little run there. Had a lot of fun. But, you know, I mean, it's only an individual stat that got us nothing, right? You know, so when you look at it, we were, you know, a team that was struggling. But, you know, to be honest, I had a lot of fun that year with those guys. It's sometimes people think it's all about winning, you know, and this is coming from me who won 2 state championships. Some of the best stories I have in college and from my friends, you know, relationships I developed over the years were from that team of 5 and 27, because you develop character. Whether you win or lose.
Absolutely.
And we developed a lot of character. We had a lot of fun together. We never really cared about individual stats. So yeah, it's one thing I can tell my kids, you know, hey, I'm, you know, got some records here. Or if I'm coaching and I'm trying to tell kids, hey, don't swing to block a shot. You know, sometimes kids might be like, well, what does he know? And I can at least be like, hey man, I know what I'm talking about here. Just give me this at least. I might not know how to shoot. I might not know how to drive like Drew does, but, you know, I can at least block shot.
Well, you say it got you nowhere, but it did get you on Point Loma's all-time leader list with 241, which, you know, shatters second place. And I don't ever see anybody coming close to taking it away from you. But, you know, Yvonne kind of talked about like the balance that you need as a college athlete, and it's tough, and you need a strong support system. And I know in particular your family. We talked about this off air. You know, you invited me to your home my junior year, and I got an opportunity to meet your family. And then going into my senior year, your family opened up your home and allowed me to stay in their home my entire senior year, which is something that I am forever thankful for your family. It's something that I never forget, and I always, you know, talk about and bring up. But for you in particular, what did your family do to support you while you were playing?
And that's awesome. And I actually really enjoy hearing that because, you know, sometimes you take things for granted, things that your parents do for you or for others. And you look back and you're like, man, that was a great example that you, I probably didn't know at the time, but you know, it impacts somebody in such a positive way. And you know, you like hearing that. You know, my dad passed away a few years ago, so it's always nice kind of reminiscing about things that he did. And yeah, that's one thing I will tell you, my dad. And in high school, it's a pretty easy thing to do, come to every one of your basketball games. I know it doesn't happen for a lot of people, but in terms of logistics, it's not super difficult, right? If you're in high school playing high school basketball, you know, your parents typically can make it to the game. So they were always at games, which was awesome. Well, then I come out to Point Loma and all of a sudden they're showing up at every single game. I mean, every home game, to the point where I'm like, I look in the, you know, I come out of the warmups and walk into the gym and I like look to the spot where they sit. There they are. There's my mom and dad, you know, and super quiet. They're not screamers. They just were enjoying watching me play. And then we start traveling. We go to Utah, right? We are like my first tournament. It was actually the first game that I started. We flew to Utah. We had a tournament there. All of a sudden my parents come walking in the gym. They just jump in their car, drive from Arizona to Utah just to come watch me play. And, you know, at the time as an athlete in college, you're like, my goodness, give me some space. You know, that's kind of how kids usually think about their parents. But I think what it instilled in me, and I saw it through my 4-year career, they came to almost every game I can remember. I mean, they would jump in their car. We played anywhere in Northern California. They'd jump in their car and they'd start driving. They'd drive the day before. They'd come and they'd show up at the game. And what I realized was that parents, they were there enjoying their kids. That's all they wanted to do. They wanted to come and they had enjoyment watching me play and they wanted to see me doing the things I love to do. And I can't tell you how much that's impacted my life personally with my kids. It's not something I think about because it's so like, you know, it's like built in for me is to be at every one of their events. And to watch them play, watch them with smiles on their face and watch them have fun. And I think that whether they recognize it now or not, because maybe I didn't when I was their age, but having the support there as you from your parents, that's what I love watching my kids play sport. I love watching them struggle. I love watching them go through hardships if they had a tough game, how they process it. I love to be there when they make their shots. I love to be there when my daughter plays volleyball. Serves aces, you know, it's all those moments that you're just building these memories that are so important in life. That's more important than anything out there is your family and the time that you spend with them, because in reality, that's what we're here for. And so, yeah, for me, my parents and my family was a tremendous support system. And I did get to see the benefit of them. They always felt like my teammates were their family as well. So from pregame meals that they would cook, that my
beef
mom
stroganoff.
The whole team, beef stroganoff, man. She does it for my team and the kids that I have now. It's like her thing, you know, and it's just, yeah, open up the home and, you know, family, we're all family together. And it's just something that's, I'm really blessed. I don't think I realized the blessing was at the time, but I'm super blessed with now because I'm a parent and I get to see, you know, the fruits of that. And hopefully my kids will remember that about myself and Bree, that we were always there. We were always there supporting them as their number one fan. And, you know, yeah, for sure. I'm blessed to have that.
So let's pivot real quick. John, do you have any funny Drew stories?
Oh man.
Uh-oh.
Well, so I remember listening to Brad
had us in tears.
Yeah. And so I know the surfing story that they didn't talk, that he didn't say, and that's a solid one. And mine's kind of on that same level of Drew and water. And I don't know if Drew has improved at all. So we were lucky enough. We in San Diego, we lived in Mission Bay and we had access to a boat. We had a boat out there. We get up, you know, early in the morning before class or, you know, on weekends, we go out as friends and we go wakeboard. Right. So, you know, we got guys like Drew and, you know, Trent Berglund who was new the same year. And it's like, hey man, let's go out, let's go wakeboarding. You know, of course, any kid is gonna be like, sure, I'm gonna go hang out on a boat. I'm in college, you know, let's go hang out. So, you know, we get out there and, you know, I don't think I was prepped for Drew's kind of how he felt around water, whether he was comfortable or not, but you know, we got life jackets. We're fine. You know, it's nothing wrong can happen. So we're like, all right, Drew, you're up. You know, let's get you in the water. Let's put, you know, get a life jacket on, throw him in, get his wakeboard on. And you know, wakeboarding is one of those things. It's kind of like riding a bike. Like if you've ever done any water sport, we can get you up on a wakeboard. It's pretty easy. It's different, but it's easy. So, but I don't think Drew really had any past history of any type of water sport. So, you know, hey, we'll give it a shot. You know, it's pretty funny watching like big, strong, athletic guys try to wakeboard their first time because they just think that it's all strength, right? They, you know, I'm going to hold on as tight as I can with my hand. I've got strong forearms, strong hands. I'm just going to hang on. You know, watching between him and Trent just plow through the water just with no success to get up. Well, so Drew's first time out there, you know, they get the rope that's like 70 feet out. We get him up, you know, he plows through the water and ultimately doesn't get up, lets go of the handle, you know, and we don't, that happens all the time wakeboarding, right? So I'm the driver of the boat. I start my slow turnaround. And if anybody who, you know, wakeboards or does any boating, you never want to go like approach the person who's in the water with any type of speed because, you know, they're in the water, you're in a big boat, you don't want to, it's just safety. So I'm turning the boat around and I'm like, just slowly put it in idle. I'm going back to Drew and, you know, I see Drew like 70 feet away and, you know, it's just straight up doggy paddling, you know, keeping his head above the water, just going like there's just water flying everywhere. And I'm like, you know, like trying to like, I wish I had binoculars. Like what's going on? Is this guy like going under? He's got a life jacket on. Right. And so I'm like, I start picking up the speed a little bit and it's just hands flailing in the air and we finally get close enough and he's like John, like he's going under the water, like he's about to go, and I'm like Drew, you have a life jacket on, like you're not nothing. And Mission Bay, I mean, it's like 12 feet of water. Like if you would have gone down, you could have just jumped right off the water and come back up. But just the funniest thing of Drew doggy paddling in just straight terror after he fell in the water in Mission Bay. And it still sticks with me today. Just that the sheer panic. And I'm just like, it's one of those things, like he didn't tell the story, but the surfing story is just like, just stand up, just stand up and you're fine. And I'm like, Drew, you got a life jacket on, dude. You're not going anywhere.
It wasn't even, the fact of drowning, it was because the murkiness of the water and you can't see what's under there. And I just had this vision of an alligator like tickling my feet or a crocodile. Yeah. And like I was ready to get up out of there. I just panicked, man. So yeah. So you asked the question, but now I just stay in my lane now.
Yep. So that will always be a classic Drew story where he was picturing him and his face and his doggy paddling in just pure terror in Mission Bay in San Diego.
That one's a good one, John. We will stop there. Yep. I don't know if I can take another funny Drew story. Let's talk post-college if we can. What thought process did you walk through just to say, here are my options post-college, here's my plan A, here's my plan B or C? I think a lot of student athletes have one plan, which is great, right? You put intention out there, you are fully focused, but having a plan B doesn't mean that you're not walking in faith, doesn't mean that you're not in your plan A, but many step out there without a plan B and then they get stuck.
Sure. Yeah. So, you know, an option for me, you know, I had dabbled with the idea of trying to play overseas. It was something I thought about for a very short time. But then quickly realized, especially as my wife and I, newly married, kind of realized that, hey, that's going to be a tough life, right? The both of us going over there and her basically watching me play and do that. And you know, I knew that Drew and Trent were going over there so I could kind of like live vicariously through their experience of going and playing overseas. But yeah, my dad and my family here in Arizona, and my dad was an entrepreneur and, you know, had a business here that I knew that I could always, come back to and be a part of. I mean, that's the rest of my family. All my older siblings were working, for our family at the time. And my wife was graduating to be a nurse. So she really had the flexibility. She could move anywhere. And at the time there was a huge nursing shortage. So literally we could have pulled up in any city and she's got a amazing job, ready to go anywhere. So really, it gave me a lot of flexibility. And much like Brad Nicholson, his story of connection from Point Loma, that was his connection that he had from Point Loma that got him a job at Van Holzen Asset Management. That's where I went. So I followed in Brad's footsteps. I got connected with that same alumni of Point Loma and ended up moving up to Sacramento and taking a job with Brad. So Brad had been there like a year and a half, 2 years since he had graduated and moved on there. And I was kind of following in his footsteps. And we were both going to be a part of that firm that he is now the president of, which is so cool. But yeah, I was with Brad when we first got our little offices and back when the company was tiny compared to it is now. And I had a lot of fun in getting into the asset management side of things, the financial side of things. There was a really close correlation between basketball and the stock market. I mean, every day you would wake up and, you know, you're managing people's portfolios, you're trading, you're trying to beat the other guys who are in the same industry as you. So from a competitive standpoint, it was right in line with everything that I loved. And that was a really cool experience coming off of playing basketball. I was like, oh, good. I'm not missing that like competitive spirit in my work. And it was a great, I was neighbors with Brad. I mean, we lived half mile down the street from each other. We basically grew up from there, going through life together. They had their son, Micah. A few months later, we had our daughter, Bella. And so we just did everything together, which was a lot of fun. Well, it came to the point where Bella was like 6 months old and we lived in Sacramento and had no family around. Bree's family lived in San Diego. My family lived in Arizona. And you start to get that call of family and what's most important. And here I was, you know, grinding and studying to be a CFA, starting for my CFA test. I got my 6 month old daughter. You know, I'm leaving at 5 in the morning. My wife is coming back from a 7 p.m. to 7 a.m. shift. Brad's wife watches Bella for 2 hours while we do the exchange. I come home when it's late, you know, and you do that for a little bit of a grind. And I'm like, man, not like I can't do this, but is this what I want my life to be? When I know that I can go back and be around my family, I've got a support system of my parents and my siblings, and my siblings now are all having kids. So there's such a strong call to come back to Arizona to be around family, and kind of goes back to your point that you brought up earlier, how important family is. So ultimately we followed that call back here to Arizona. When my daughter was about 8 months, 10 months old, we moved back to Arizona and kind of started our roots back over here. But yeah, that's where I was. I definitely had a plan A, plan B. We wanted to venture off and try something new, which is why we moved to Sacramento. And we loved the experience. We've made lifelong friends, the Nicholsons. They were supposed to be coming down here like this next week, but to play in a baseball tournament. We were going to spend time with them. But unfortunately, COVID has kind of put all that on hold. But no, we still have lifelong friends that we vacation with from up there. So it was nice to go and try something new. Say we did it, you know, didn't fail at it as newlyweds. We had a lot of fun. We met lifelong friends, but ultimately we kind of came back to a different plan that we had, into your point, you know, of like having that backup plan. So, yeah.
And you later became an entrepreneur in the car wash industry?
Yeah. So that's one of our kind of our family companies. So when I say my dad was an entrepreneur, he really was. I mean, from apartment buildings to running a nonprofit camp up in Prescott that he uses for ministry, to him getting involved in the car wash industry many years ago. And it was something that my brother and my sister, when they both graduated from college, they jumped into and took head on and started growing that company. And so when I finally made that decision to leave Sacramento and come back, here was a company that our family was running that was in the car wash industry. That was really niche business. We work specifically with car dealerships and provide car washes for car dealerships. And so yeah, being an entrepreneur is just when I came and moved here, right? I had a business degree, emphasis in finance. So it's like, okay, what are my strengths here? What can I do for this company? And you quickly find out as an entrepreneur, you do whatever is necessary, much like the game of basketball. It's like, whatever's needed, you do. So all of a sudden, here we are providing car washes for dealerships. And we realized, hey, let's start building our own car washes. We can save money and we can do it better. And what do? I start learning how to weld, you know, and start learning how to become a machinist and fabricate car washes, literally from ordering raw metal and then turning it into a car wash. And people are like, wow, where'd you go to college for? Did you learn how to weld? I'm like, no, I got a business degree that, you know, taught me, just how to navigate the business world, but it's kind of self-taught. You do what's necessary. So I'd say that's kind of the life of an entrepreneur, is you do what's necessary in order to keep your company alive and to keep it going. And, you know, my sister does accounting, my brother does the sales. I help, you know, manufacture and build the car washes. And it's much like a basketball team, right? You learn what you're good at, and you divide and conquer, and it's provided me the ability to, and the freedom to coach basketball, a game that I love. It's provided me the opportunity to be a part of everything my kids do with sports. And, it's definitely a blessing, kind of what my parents both taught me, and all of us siblings, how to work together, how to work as a team. And it's been super rewarding.
Yeah. And you talked about that earlier, about the life lessons you learned through sport, and they're so important. And that, you know, it's a lot of lessons that are carbon copy of life. And so for athletes today, what advice would you give anyone who's starting to plan life after sports?
I would say, don't be afraid to fail. Failing is okay. I know it's super cliche, but it applies so much to life. You know, in the game of basketball, you learn to push yourself, and you learn to fail, because now you've learned how to navigate that failure, and now you're ready next time. So I'd say the same for business, is like, take those risks, especially when you're young. Take those risks. You're going to learn way more from failures than you are from getting lucky that first time and succeeding, because we all know that doesn't happen. You know, I mean, you've been grinding your whole life as a basketball player, and what it's led to you. I mean, with all the new stuff that you're doing, and being on the broadcasting side is so cool. I can imagine 10 years ago, you never thought once that you were going to be doing this. And here you are, given the opportunity, and you're not afraid of it, and you're taking it head on. And now, where is this going to take you? I'd say the biggest thing is, don't be afraid to fail. Cause that's one thing I would look back on myself and be like, and, you know, make sure you apply yourself and take those risks, whatever it is, whether it's that job, whether it's the move, whether it's that relationship, whatever it is, don't be afraid to fail.
Yeah. And being an entrepreneur is pretty much betting on yourself. And the best thing that I enjoy about being an entrepreneur is the flexibility that it gives you, you've been with your family and do the things that you enjoy and love. And for you, you've gotten into coaching. And so tell us, why have you gotten into coaching?
So obviously my kids were at Scottsdale Christian. They were going there at the time. This was 2015. So my daughter was probably in fifth grade. My son was in second grade at the time. And the coach that I played for, Bob Fredericks, was still coaching. So, you know, he had been there since the late 80s. Ultimately second winningest coach in Arizona history, in Arizona high school history. 7 state championships in 20 years, just ultimately ended up coaching for 35 years before I was lucky enough to take over the position. But yeah, so about 6 years ago, he knew I was around SCA. My kids were there. I'd see him walk in the hallways when I'd pick up kids. And he just said, hey, John, you know, we've got a really good team that we got shaping up this year. Do you have any interest in coming and helping out? And at the time, you know, it was more of a, hey, come play, you know, because he's like, we've got like 3 6'7" guys that are senior. 2 of them are seniors. 1's a freshman. He's like, we'd love to have you on the court and like play and like work with them and play with them. And of course, you know, me at the time, I'm like, you know, 32, feel like am I hanging up my basketball shoes? You know, my city league days are they over? And, you know, coach is saying, hey, come play with these high schoolers. I'm like, sure, let's go. You know, and I really jumped into it, not knowing what I was getting into or what I was doing. I just thought, yep, this will be a fun experience. And lucky enough, my wife was like, sure, go do it. You know, you have my blessing to be gone every night. And, you know, ended up quickly falling in love with the coaching side of it. I remember the first game I sat at, you know, coach, you know, there's a couple of assistant coaches, and Coach Fredericks looks at me. He's like, all right, I want you to like keep stats of this game as it's going. You know, I want you to keep, I forget what it was, you know, keep the rebounds and keep the turnovers. You know, it's like 3 minutes of the game. I'm sitting there, you know, writing down everybody's numbers and I'm trying to track it. You know, it comes to a point, I'm like, this sucks. Screw this. I'm not keeping stats. I want to be involved in this game. Like, I don't want to be. And he wasn't treating me like a statistician. He was just giving me a job and a task that would help the team. But I quickly realized, like, no, man, I want to be involved in this game. And there's so much in this game that I feel like I can help out with and that I see that I can teach these kids about. So, I mean, from my first game, it was like there was this like just passion to want to help and want to teach. And I think that that's something that every teacher who teaches knows and understands, and any person that ultimately gets into coaching understands, is that this passion to pass on knowledge that you have, that you've been given, to the next generation or to anybody else, your kids, whoever it is so rewarding as a coach, is to teach. And, you know, I got, obviously we shared Coach Wilmore as coaches, and you know, I still think back to the things that he said to us, the life lessons he taught us, the drills that we've run. Like, I still take that stuff. And I'd like to think that if he was sitting there in the gym with me, he'd be like, nice job, John. You know, that was awesome. You know, cause somebody probably taught him that same thing. You know, he learned it from somebody. So it's the passing of knowledge on down, and it really is super rewarding. You know, that's the really cool thing about coaching. And ultimately, so I was an assistant coach for 5 years, and kind of through the process, the head coach was like, John, you're going to be the next coach. John, you're going to be the next coach. And at first, this was like year two, I'm like, no way. Okay, keep saying that, but there's no way I'm going to be the head coach. Year three, John, you're going to be the next head coach. You're going to coach your son here at SCA. And I'm like, nope, I'm not. That's not me. I'm not built for it. And literally year by year went by to the point where he convinced me, ultimately where I convinced myself that I can do this and it's something I want to do. And so we started making that transition process about a year ago, where it would be his last year and I would take over the following year. And so, yeah, I'm super blessed. My son's in seventh grade, so I got a few years before I see him, you know, and I know that's always tough, coaching your kid. And it's really, ultimately, it's not why I'm doing it now. If he decided he didn't want to play basketball, I'd be okay with it. I'd be sad a little bit, but I'd be okay with it. You know, I'm not coaching to just coach him. I'm coaching because it's so rewarding. So yeah, but ultimately, you know, my first year here with COVID, it's been, you know, insane, just dealing with everything. And it's really like not what I could have ever predicted my first year would look like. But, you know, it's like I always tell the players, it's a blessing. We still can come in the gym and we can still shoot and we can still play. And right now that's a blessing. And as long as you view it as a blessing, you'll be happy and content, you know.
I mean, you're in the right space and you're going to make a great head coach just because your personality, you have a passion for putting other people before yourself. That's a big part of coaching. And we got an opportunity to connect during this COVID time as I've, you know, trained a couple of your guys over Zoom, which was a cool experience and, you know, a time that I'll never forget. But if you can take yourself and put yourself back in those kids' shoes and speak to a younger John, what advice would you give yourself?
I think it would go back to that's the same thing I said before, was just a life lesson of don't be afraid to fail. Because I think for me in high school, I don't think, and I know this sounds so terrible, like, and corny, in high school and in college, I don't think I ever hit my peak. And just, it was given the circumstances that I was in. When I played for SCA, I played for an awesome team and I had an awesome coach and I was a really good high school basketball player. But I think that I was capped because I never fully believed in myself and I never fully pushed myself harder than I could have. Because I see kids now and I see the devotion that they have. You know, we all know that the gym rats, the guys like the Brad Nicholsons, the guys that know the scratches that are on a rim because they look at it so much, right? Like, that wasn't me. And I would go back to myself and say, like, you can get so much more out of yourself if you just push yourself a little harder. And it kind of showed when I went to Point Loma my first year, when I walked in, and my mindset was like, man, I hope I make the travel team, you know, and 3 games into the season, here I am starting. And I'm like, wow, first I had a coach that believed in me, but I also had a coach that pushed me harder than I thought I was capable of. And so that's a big thing for me is to push, you know, as a coach here, is to push these kids harder than they think that they're capable of, and helping them recognize how good they can be. Because I think a lot of kids these days, some kids are like, man, I'm the best player. I'm going to go play in college. You know, you got the Brad Nicholson, the kids that are just like, it's a different mindset. But most kids aren't like that. Most kids are just out. They want to have a great time with their friends, and they want to have fun playing high school basketball. And you got to coach them as good as you coach that gym rat, the kid that is going to be your star player. You know, you can't treat anybody unfairly because they have a different mindset or a different goal in life. What I need to do is I need to recognize, okay, you might not want to play college basketball, and that's totally fine. But I want to make you recognize your potential. That's my job as a coach. And that might not be in basketball. That might be in your self-confidence. That might be in the way that you act when you walk out these doors, and how you treat your parents and how you treat your peers. How can I make you be the best person you're capable of being? So that's what I would say as somebody, if I go back and talk to myself, would be like, I wish I would have been shown my maximum potential a little more, because I think we all have a little extra in us that that's what good coaches are great at doing, are they're pulling you out and making you better than you think you are.
That was a powerful look back. Now take us forward. What's next for you?
What's next for me is being at every one of my kids' games. Like my dad. I was really enjoying my kids. You know, my daughter's a sophomore. She's got a couple years left. And if my wife hears me in the background and then she hears me say that she's, 3 years away from leaving this house, she might start crying. And watching my son play basketball and any other sport that he wants to play, and coaching him. So that's kind of my next, 3 to 5 to 7 year plan, and continue coaching through that. And I've always, at least from the school's perspective, as long as I'm not a terrible coach to the point where they need to remove me, I've committed to coaching through my son. And I really hope that I coach past my son, because I don't want my son to be the reason why I'm coaching, and it's currently not. But I hope that that passion is still there, 7 years down the road when he's done, and to continue coaching. And then it sounds super corny, but we have hopes that our daughter would play college volleyball. She's, she loves the game and she has aspirations to play in college if she's able to. So that's to kind of continue on and watch her play, much like my parents did. And whether it's us driving to every game, wherever she's at, or finding a little apartment somewhere, it's just, just hanging out with family and, ultimately at some point, work to me is work. It's, I love what I do, which makes it not work. And I'm blessed because of that. And so, it's not like, oh, I'm going to work for 20 more years. I mean, my dad worked till the day that he died. And that's kind of the mindset that I have in terms of work. As long as you're doing something that you have, that you're passionate about, you're not really working. It's just navigating, watching our kids grow up, watching them wherever they go, and kind of following them not too closely to the point where they're annoyed, and spending time with my wife and hanging out with friends. That's not too much to ask. It's a pretty simple life.
That's what it's all about. Yeah. It's the simple things. So John, when you're rocking out, what's on your playlist?
For sure Kygo, and for sure Griffin. Okay, so I'm a little more house EDM. I could listen to that all day long. I can listen to it playing basketball. I can listen to it going to bed, listen to it sitting in the pool, riding in the car. But man, it's like the perfect jam. So Drew, I don't know, do you ever listen to Kygo?
That's why he said Vegas. That's totally Vegas at the pool style type tunes, man.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, we saw Kygo. We saw Kygo this last year right before COVID hit and the world shut down, and it was phenomenal concert. So no, yeah, that's my jam, man. Just nice chill music.
This has been fun, man, to catch up in this way and to tell your story and kind of reminisce a little bit. We really appreciate your time.
Yeah, thank you for having me. It was great seeing you on all the Zoom calls this summer working with my guys.
Yes.
So it's been fun to kind of reconnect doing that, but no, this has been fun, and hopefully somebody somewhere hears something that, you know, they relate to, or they hear, and it helps them, you know, appreciate either their parents a little more, or their kids if they're in sports. And, you know, I think that's the most important thing in life is our relationships and our families and our kids and our parents. And man, we're all blessed.
Yeah, your story will definitely be a blessing. So we appreciate you sharing. Thanks, Joe.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you.
Absolutely.
For the opportunity.
Scottsdale Christian head coach, John Anderson.
Thanks to everyone for tuning in. To the athletes, keep being the best you can be. Run your race with excellence. To the parents of athletes, let's continue to support our children with patience, grace, and understanding, learning to recognize how to truly become the guides and the stewards that we are supposed to be. To everyone, be willing to share your experiences to help others along their paths, and always be open to the wisdom that comes your way.
For more information about the 21 Podcast, 21 Media, and services provided by Train Harder 21, visit the website at drewlasker.com and follow us across all social media platforms. Remember to add this podcast to your playlist, subscribe, rate, and review. Until next episode of 21, Train Harder.